Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with greed. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, I have got bassist for the band Grim Valentine, Wes Luna. And we have a pretty great conversation bonding over our love of music, our love of Denver. It's a good time. But before we get into the conversation, I'm going to open things up the way that I always do by just kind of talking about where things are with me. You see, one of the things that one of my psychologists said to me once was, if more people had a gym membership, they'd go out of business. And that's true. And I'm not talking about crazy exercise. I'm not talking about being able to run a marathon or powerlifting. I'm talking about getting yourself outside on a daily basis and taking a walk. You know, doing a handful of push-ups and jumping jacks in the morning. A handful. You know what I mean? I'm talking about a very base level of activity that will have a profound effect on the way your body works. When your body is not functioning correctly, your brain can't function correctly either. There's a science in that. It's all just health. There's physical health and there's brain health. Your brain is a physical organ in your body, and we all tend to think of it as if it's just this ethereal cloud inside your skull that's not affected by the physical. But the fact of the matter is that it's greatly affected by the physical. There are a lot of things, and I'm not talking about aesthetics. I'm not talking about how you look. I'm talking about how you feel. And if you don't feel good, you're not going to think good. The quality of your health affects the quality of your thoughts. And I say all of this because I think in the process of trying to make myself feel better and to keep myself calm and relaxed during this time when everything is so agitated, I've been going about it all wrong. I've been pouring all of this extra sad sauce over this sad layer cake and just making it worse. Because the fact of the matter is, eating pizza three times a week, not moving around, and barely seeing the sunshine is not going to do me any favors. How am I going to feel at the end of a week where I hardly move around? Where I don't actually get any serious nutrition into my body? You'll make yourself sick. And I did. I did get sick. Luckily, I'm not sick with the current thing that's kicking around. And I'm real grateful for that. But it also was kind of a wake-up call that I need to start taking better care of myself. And that you can tell yourself when you're, you know, reaching for the booze or the cigarettes or the weed, or the hamburgers, or the pizza, you can tell yourself that these things are there to make you feel better when things are rough. And I think in certain circumstances, they can be. But you gotta be real careful not to slip over into completely giving up. Because completely giving up is what we're trying to avoid here. Finding ways to keep yourself engaged and awake and alive is really what we should be doing right now. And allow yourself to relax. Cut yourself some slack. If you're not out there crushing it the way that you used to, or if you've never been a person who's been out there crushing it, you can still take care of yourself appropriately. So here's this. I'm going to try and do it, and you can try and hold me accountable. And I'll be there for you as well. If you need somebody to lean on, if you're feeling low and you don't know what else to do other than pour some more gas on the fire because at least it's bright, you can reach out to me. I'm here. And I don't want to tell you what your situation is, but I'm going to tell you what my situation is. And that's a situation where I know that I work best when I can actually take this instrument, take this physical piece of myself and apply it towards something. If I can get myself up and move around, if my brain is functioning more or less properly, I feel better. And I think you'll feel better too. So let's just be careful with our choices right now, okay? Let's just try to be a little careful. Know when you're starting to go over the edge. Because it could happen without you even realizing it. So think about something that you could do every single day that activates those gratitude centers and that activates the part of your brain that feels awake, alive, and excited to see what's next. All right, enough of that. Let's get into it with Wes Luna. Hi, Wes.
Hello again.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about where things are at currently. Where are you locked down at?
I'm in Lakewood, near Casa Bonita.
Oh, nice.
It's like literally right down the street from where we live.
You know, it's funny because Casa Bonita was my last restaurant experience before leaving Denver.
Oh, wow. Yeah. My fiance hasn't been there before. We took her there like a year ago. And just for, you know, the experience, because I told her beforehand, the food there isn't very good, but right. You just want to go there at least one time if you haven't been there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I was looking at the menu the first time my wife took me there, and I was asking her, well, what do you think? Like, I'm trying to pay attention to certain things, and I think there's probably more protein in the chicken. And she's like, yeah, just what color?
Yeah, that's true. What color? Because you pay, it's like $14, or maybe it might be more now. I can't remember how much it is.
Yeah, it's like $17, and you get all the food you can eat.
Yeah, you pay a set price, and then you get all the food. But it's mainly the sopapillas that are the best.
Yeah. It's a real experience. It's something unlike anything anywhere else because you go to this bright pink Spanish mission in the middle of a strip mall area. There used to be a closed Blockbuster video next door, and
yeah, there's a laundromat there now, I think.
Yeah, it's not great. But then you get inside and it's like a TARDIS. The thing just opens up to like a small town, and there's cliff divers, and the cliff divers are genuinely amazing, but they're also very, very out of place.
Right.
It's such a bizarre dichotomy of ideas in the arcade that hasn't been fixed or updated since the 70s.
Yeah, it's funny because like when I went there a year ago, I was like, it seems so much bigger now than when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because when you're a kid, it looks like a lot of fun. But then when you get older, you go, you're like, oh, okay, it wasn't that great, but I can see why kids would enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's where we're at right now. Luckily, I still have a few hours at work that they're giving me, so I could, kind of socialize with coworkers.
Yeah, but you really forget how much you take interactions with other people for granted until you can't.
Yeah, and luckily, my work is owned by Anheuser-Busch, so they're one of the companies that is able to kind of stay open as much as they can for, like, takeout and pickup.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're not getting all of our hours that we usually get, but, I mean, at this point, I'll take whatever I can. So,
well,
and
tell
it's
me
nice to kind of get out of the house, you know?
Tell me a little bit about life before the quarantine. Take me back a little earlier. What was your upbringing like?
Well, I was born in Aurora, grew up in Highlands Ranch, because we moved out of Aurora when I was like six, so maybe in like mid-90s, we moved to Highlands Ranch. And I don't know if you've been to Highlands Ranch before or not,
yeah.
But it's kind of like, you know, suburban, really not much to do there, but raise families, really.
Yeah, yeah, so, lots of prefab houses, just, yeah. Neighborhoods that look like they could have come out at E.T.,
yeah, exactly. So there wasn't much to do during high school except, you know, play music. And I started playing, like, in a band at, like, maybe 13 years old, maybe 14.
What made you want to do it? What was the thing that inspired you to say, I have to do this?
Well, I might have been, like, five. So let me see, 88, 89, 91. Maybe, like, 93. My parents took me to the Taste of Colorado, you know, the festival I hold here every year.
Yeah, yeah.
The free festival. And then Three Dog Night was playing, and they were even old back then.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's just like cool to see everybody know the words, all the songs, and everybody have a good time. It didn't matter how old you were. So that kind of maybe,
you know,
want to do it.
It's funny you bring that up, because I think that I saw Three Dog Night when I was a kid. My parents took me somewhere in Michigan, like, just...
Oh, wow.
So, holy shit.
Well, that was, like, the first show I can remember. I'm sure they took me out even before that, but that's, like, the really first, like, clear memory I have of a show at that young of age. And then when I was maybe 12, a friend of mine and I went to go see Aerosmith do their Girls of Summer tour at Pepsi Center.
Yeah.
And we had, like, bleacher tickets, but one of the ladies working there, we caught her, in a good mood, I guess. And she upgraded us to floor seats.
Nice.
Like, right in front of the catwalk. So that was the show that did it for me, because I was, like, 12, front row at an Aerosmith concert, you know.
Yeah,
so,
giant rock and roll spectacle.
Yeah, so that was, like, I was like, okay, now this is definitely what I want to do now. So I didn't. That's what I kind of started playing seriously after that.
Did you take lessons?
Yeah. No, self-taught.
Nice. Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. I don't actually come across a lot of self-taught musicians anymore. Most people have, you know, kind of gone the route of, well, I learned a little something here and then transitioned into, being more creative with it. But, like, I'm self-taught as well, but it's kind of a curse, I think, in some ways, because when you've got that ear where you're able to just kind of pick things up and deconstruct them and figure it out, you almost don't have the patience to learn how to read music or anything later.
Right, that's kind of how it was with me too. Because I think I tried one time, but I have ADHD as well.
Yeah.
So, like, I get really fidgety, and when I felt like, when I was in school, I would take a test anytime I would go to a lesson. So that's kind of also why I didn't do it. But I don't know. I also didn't want to learn other people's songs. I think I wanted to, right away, start writing my own.
What age did you start writing your own songs?
Maybe 14, because I just became a freshman in high school. I think it was maybe closer to 15 years old. And I met one of my longest knowing friends I have now. I think we've known each other for like almost maybe 14 years. I can't really do the math right now. Since like 2004, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, about 14, 15 years, something like that.
Any of those songs still kicking around?
No, we, well, first I was going to play guitar, but then he wanted to play guitar. I was like, okay, I'll do drums. So I self-taught myself drums as well. And it was just like a little metal, like hardcore band at the time. And we actually got good enough to where we got label offers, but my mom wanted me to graduate. She didn't want me to drop out. So
right,
and then my old bandmate got busted for drugs, so he had to go to rehab. So I kind of dissolved that project, and then I didn't really start doing anything until after I graduated. So because that kind of lasted almost all through high school.
So what about you, though? I mean, where was your head at in all of this?
I wanted to pursue it, but then. I'm kind of glad I didn't do it at that time because, I mean, my mom was right. Like, it was good that I graduated, and then it's like, after you graduate, do whatever you want to do. If you want to do music, go ahead and do it. Only because during that time, like I said, my old bandmate got busted for drugs. I didn't really do drugs at all. So it kind of made me maybe step back and, you know, not take the risk after that. And then after graduation, I started getting into bands again. I started drumming for another like hardcore local band. We play like one show at the Gothic with a band called Tower of Rome.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of them before, but I think they broke up a long time ago. But yeah, we played a show with them at the Gothic around probably like the year I graduated, maybe 2008. And then that band broke up, so I started doing street team stuff for bands. Like, I would just reach out and ask if they needed help with, you know, promotion or anything.
Yeah.
So the first band I worked for was Under the Influence of Giants. We're from Sherman Oaks, and they're now known as AWOL Nation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's Aaron Bruno's first band. They were called Under the Influence of Giants, and that was like the first band I worked for. And then I worked for Aaron Carter for a little bit, and then Drake Bell, who I befriended. I've known him since pretty much I've worked for him, because he's only a couple years older than I am. But yeah, so that's kind of where it all started.
How do you get yourself from that place where you're trying to put yourself into, we're getting a lot of noise.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on. Don't keep going off all morning.
Oof.
Yeah. Cause there's a couple of old folks homes near where we live too. So
yeah,
hopefully wherever they're going, they're all right.
Yeah. You know, I have to wonder if this is part of the new normal for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I was starting to get used to hearing the ambulance going off by our house.
Yeah, that's really something.
Yeah. Well, there it goes. All right.
What is it? No, that's all right. You know, it's funny, though, because a situation like this where you're getting used to hearing ambulances on a regular basis. I mean, that's what does that do to your state of mental well-being?
I don't know. To be honest, when all of this first happened, I didn't really know about it until like it got down to where we had to be like quarantined for the 14 days.
Yeah.
And now they extended it, I think, to late April.
Yeah.
But I didn't really take it seriously. And now I'm like, you know, I'm aware. I'm not going to try and let it like run my life, but I'm aware of it, and I'm going to take it seriously. You know, but I don't know. I'm like kind of nervous to see what happens, you know, with all the pandemic going on.
How do you typically process, let's say, stressful situations?
I used to smoke a lot. I just stopped yesterday, actually.
Oh, yeah?
My first day smoke-free, because I've been smoking since I was like 14. And I've quit before, and then I started up again. But usually I was smoking a lot when I get stressed out. But now I've been trying to write more songs usually when I get stressed out. Or maybe not just a song, but like a guitar part maybe. And just like, you know, demo it and then go back to it and then finish it, writing it later. But that's what I've been doing lately now is just trying to write as much music as I can.
Pouring yourself into work.
Yeah, especially during this time where we have to be home on a more better time than, you know, to write music.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, come back out with, you know, with a new EP or something when you can finally start traveling again.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of new music coming out here at the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been writing a lot myself. I just got the studio up and running, and it's working out pretty great.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. I wish I like got my home studio before all this happened, because like a lot of my friends have a studio and it just costs a lot of money.
Yeah,
to record, especially right now. So I'm like, this would have been the perfect time to have a home studio to like demo songs out.
Well, if there's any wealthy benefactors listening in, we'll direct you to where you can send gear to Wes.
I mean, I've just been writing and demoing it on my phone with like the voice memo.
I use the voice memo a lot. It's a great tool.
Yeah. I'll have a bunch of material when I'm ready, when everything kind of goes back to normal.
So what do you think about? What do you think about music's effect on you as far as how it's shaped your perception of mental health?
Well, I grew up on like classic rock, luckily. You know, like bands like Three on Night, Aerosmith.
Yeah, yeah.
Like AC/DC. I actually just saw George Thorogood and REO Speedwagon a couple years ago.
Awesome.
So, like... stuff like that I've been growing up with, so like that always helps, like putting on old records. Like my fiance and I collect a lot of vinyls, so we'll just like hang out, maybe have a couple beers and put a record on when we get like stressed out. That helps a lot for me, at least.
Yeah, it really helps to have somewhere to pin your hopes when things are not going well, something that can bring up your mood and elevate you to a place where you're able to focus on something in the moment that's pleasurable versus problematic.
Right. And actually, I was just listening to one of my Chuck Berry vinyls the other day. I think it was one of his first ones he put out, called After School Sessions.
Yeah.
The one that came out in like 1958, the one that had School Days on it. But yeah, like old music like that, I'll listen to over and over, especially when I get stressed out.
Well, and Chuck Berry, that's got to be pretty inspirational guitar-wise.
Yeah, well, a lot of people, I feel... nowadays, like bands like I don't know, like Microwave. I like, you know, I don't know if you've heard who Microwave is.
Yeah.
I like them a lot, but I feel like a lot of bands are, you know, coming out now trying to be sound kind of like them a lot. There's a lot of bands that sound like that nowadays. So I feel like we kind of need a new rock band to come out, or maybe an artist, not necessarily a rock band, but I don't know. I haven't really seen a really good rock and roll band come out.
It's been a while, right?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I like all that like emo pop punk music, but I feel like it's just too common, maybe is the right word to use.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it feeds a certain ethos. Especially when you're younger, it's pretty easy to tap into because it's got that frenetic energy. It's fun, but then, you know, there's yelling and stuff. So you get to, you get to express all that anger that you're looking to get out, and you got nowhere to put because you got all those hormones raging through you. Your brain isn't fully developed yet. It's not to say that it's an underdeveloped brain that likes pop punk music, but I dug it. I mean, I grew up on the Descendants and Bad Religion and stuff like that. So it's like, I get it.
Yeah. I like it too. And like, I have to be in the right mood, but I really grew up on stuff like Chuck Berry and Muddy Waters and, Howlin' Wolf and, you know,
some of those early Howlin' Wolf records are really something.
Yeah. And it's like really rare. Like whenever I meet anybody my age who knows who any of those people are, like you must know, you know, your history.
Yeah.
A lot of people my age or even older really know who those artists are unless they've heard it from their parents. But yeah, like that's how I would find it. I would figure out, like, you know, I would listen to Chuck Berry, like who did he like? Like who did he listen to? And then he would listen to people like Muddy Waters and Nat King Cole. And then I would go even further and be like, okay, well, who do they listen to? So that's kind of how I find out all these artists and bands.
Was it always pretty easy for you to keep your head on straight when things were overwhelming?
Usually. I haven't really had to go through like serious, like, well, I don't know. Because when I was 18, I had to go through the death of a friend who was actually my old bandmate, was in a car accident from drinking and driving. And one of our friends who was with him passed away on impact.
Oh,
and like
man.
The day after it, my mother woke me up and was like, your friend and your other friend got a car accident, and we don't know which one passed away yet. So that was kind of hard to deal with.
Yeah.
So that's what I like tell myself. I would, you know, drink and drive after that.
What was your upbringing like as far as dealing with death?
It was really actually easy laid back. My parents were always supportive. They were always
Were they pretty open about that stuff, having conversations about things.
Yeah. Well, when I was younger, my dad had a alcohol problem, and he would, you know, be drunk quite a lot. So we've had our issues where we've almost had fights before, but he's been sober for a long time now. So I kind of had to grow up with that a little bit. And, you know, it didn't get violent or anything, but like him and my mom would kind of fight a lot sometimes, and she kicked him out once and told him but if you come back, you better get sober. And he came back and he got sober. So
it does create an environment of uncertainty, though.
It's,
you know, my dad's been sober most of my life, but I remember when he wasn't.
Yeah, especially if you're a kid and you're going through that, you don't really know how to handle it.
Yeah.
So you just kind of have to take it, you know, by each situation.
You ever see anybody about any of that? Go to any Al-Anon meetings or anything like that? Or it wasn't pretty much just...
No. He would... with Tim, he... I figured out later what happened and where he was when he was gone. And then when he came back, I knew something changed. But I didn't know, like, how people, you know, got sober.
Yeah.
And then I learned later on out, you know, there's all... Like meetings that you can go to and stuff that can help you with the addiction. But that was kind of like my first like experience with addiction, not my own, but how to go through a family member's.
Sure. Well, no, but that's a pretty big deal, especially when it's a parent. You have to start putting yourself in charge of certain things.
So that's kind of what I did. Like, I would have to kind of step up when he would be gone. So it kind of taught me, you know, to take charge of certain situations. But again, I still didn't really know how to handle it. Because, I mean, I was like, you know, really young. So
how are you with control issues now?
Better, yeah. Much better. I usually have to see what the situation is, and I can usually control it to a certain point in a, you know, a good way.
Do you feel like you have to take control of situations?
No, sometimes I've learned, you know, like, we're married and I'm engaged now, so we've all had our mistakes that we made in our relationships before.
Sure.
So, and, you know, I made some dumb ones in the past, and we've took a little time apart from each other, and that was a situation I learned, you know, you just have to let it run its course.
Yeah.
And be patient, and if it comes back to you, then it'll come back to you. So, luckily for me, it did. But, yeah, no, sometimes you just have to let it do its thing, you know? You can't really control it.
As far as those ideas of letting go of control, listening, patience, things like that, where do you get your guidance from on those things?
A lot of times my fiance will let it handle that, and my parents still there, but I have a really supportive family, and she has a really supportive family too. So I feel like family for me is the main thing when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah, it's pretty great when you can rely on people, and when you've got good people in your sphere. When you don't have good people that you're surrounded with, it's amazing the chaos it'll have in your life, regardless of what you're trying to do.
Right, and I can see from other people who don't have necessarily good family situation, like what, you know, places that we go, but luckily for me, my family is still all supportive of each other, so, and I try not to take it for granted. I mean, there'll be some times where we'll, like, argue, you know, but I try not, you know, to let it go too far to the point where we don't talk anymore.
Yeah. So well, recognizing that and having gratitude for it is pretty huge.
Yeah, if there's an argument, you know, give it some time and then come back and, you know, figure out problems, solving problems for it. So, but yeah, when I get stressed out, or if I have a big issue I'm dealing with, like I said, I used to smoke a lot, but now my new outlet is just trying to write music.
How do you deal with the, withdrawal symptoms?
Well, I'm on one day of not smoking, and I've already been craving it, like, all day. And, like, usually when I do interviews, I usually will have a cigarette throughout the whole interview, or, like, a podcast, but...
Yeah.
Like, right now I'm drinking a beer outside, so that's kind of my thing now, but it's hard, like, again, you know, when people smoke and they want to quit, they'll be a relapse point or a moment where it'll start back up again. I feel like it happens to everybody. And I've had to do it like two or three times. It's like my fourth time trying to quit.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, you know, that's the thing. I mean, trying to quit smoking is a motherfucker.
Yeah. The last time I quit, and then I went on tour, and we played at a venue called the Abbey Theater in Chicago, Illinois, and I got drunk after and started back up again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Chicago. Yeah. That's the thing. Travel can really make things difficult when you're, especially when you're a traveling musician, because you don't know necessarily where the money is coming from all the time. You don't necessarily have a backup plan if the van breaks down.
Yeah, it's just one of those, we'll see what happens when it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And you handle situations like that on the fly pretty well?
Sometimes, not Not that one, though. Because I was just like, actually, I think I was explaining to someone how I've been trying to quit, and then there I am smoking again. So I don't think I handled that one pretty very good.
That is kind of a, you know, like a Midwestern East Coasty kind of thing, though. Like if you run, if you're quitting smoking and then someone comes across you and they're a smoker, they're like, you think you're better than me?
And I was like,
no. You got to go down with me.
What a better place to do it than Chicago, too.
Yeah, Chicago's pretty great. Used to play the Elbow Room in the Underground Lounge in Chicago. I haven't been to Chicago in a long time. I miss that place.
Yeah, we play the Abbey Theater. I think it burnt down now.
But, yeah, I think I heard that.
Yeah, we got to play there luckily before it burnt down. That was like the last tour I did was with my old band, the Photo Alice.
Well, tell me about the new band. What are you guys working on currently?
So I kind of have two bands going. I play drums in like a death metal band that my coworker and I kind of started. One of my coworkers moved here from Alabama, and he was looking to, you know, play with people in his two-piece. So he needed a drummer. I was like, sure, I'll drum. I haven't drummed in a while. So I'm doing that, and then my main band that I do it, called Grim Valentine. I took it from a Dinosaur Pileup song because I like the name, and I searched it all over the internet. I didn't find anybody with that name on Spotify, at least as a band. So that was another reason why I took it. that project I do all the instruments because I don't really have a band and I don't really want to wait around for people who don't really want to play. So I'll like demo out a bunch of songs and I just go to the studio and record them all myself.
And playing all the instruments and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I do that too. Mostly because my musical tastes are about as eclectic as my attention span. So every other day I might want to do something a little bit different.
Right. And then sometimes it can be a little boring when you do it by yourself, but a lot of times I have a lot more creative control.
Yeah. Well, but again, that's the thing. It's like, you've got more control, but you lack something that could come from the collaboration.
Right. There's not another pair of ears to help you, you know.
Yeah.
With maybe suggesting to do a different part there or here. That's the one thing, the downside is that you don't have, you know, somebody else kind of putting in their opinions on it. So.
Well, we're all looking forward to whatever the hell is going to come out of this quarantine. And
yeah.
Thanks for talking to me today.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
What a lovely guy, right? That was a really good conversation. I want to thank him for taking the time to talk to me about this. You know, I said something in the intro that struck me absolutely silly, and it was that I said we all tend to think of our brain as a cloud living in our skull. I don't think everyone thinks that. I don't even know if I think that. This is what I'm talking about. Me no think good right now. But you know what is good right now? You can get some more Wes Luna in your life by going to grimvalentine.com. They got all kinds of stuff. I would say tour dates, but right now everything's up in the air. But there's at least some music, something you could put on while you're out there taking a walk or doing whatever it is you gotta do. But until next week, don't kill yourselves out there.